So yes, I want to study two different questions in the context of the KKL MMT model. And this is work still in progress, done in collaboration with Margus Berg and Boris Kurz from MIT. In order to set the stage and to explain to you what the two questions are that I want to discuss, I have to give a short introduction into the model of KKLMT. I think that all of you are basically familiar with the model from last year's workshop. So I go just quickly through the components of the model. Here I drew a rough sketch of the model. So the starting point is a Calabi-Yau manifold, which has a discrete symmetry. In this case, a Z2 symmetry, which will be used in the Orienti folding process. And the manifold has two warped throat regions. So to repeat, the geometry contains two warped throat regions, which are stabilized by introducing some imaginary self-dual three-form flux. That means that this complex combination of the Ramon-Ramon three-form flux and the NSNS three-form flux obeys this self-duality condition that the internal six-dimensional Hodge duality of this three-form is I times itself. And this introduction of this three-form flux leads to a superpotential given by an integral over the manifold of the flux wedge, the holomorphic three-form of the manifold. And this is assumed to stabilize all the complex structure moduli and also the Dilaton tau. Now, in order also to be able to stabilize the Keller moduli, the authors introduce, in addition, such wrap D7 rings, which are wrapped about some four cycles in the manifold. And they assume that the gauge theory on the world volume of these D7 rings gets strongly coupled at some point and get genus condensate. And in this way, they get an additional contribution to the superpotential, which is an exponential of the Keller modulus rho, whose real part is the volume of the wrapped four cycle. And the constants small and capital A depend on the gauge group. And by inclusion of this additional contribution to the superpotential, they manage also to stabilize the Keller moduli, but in an ADS minimum. So one of the questions that I want to ask, it's the first question that appears in my introduction, but it's actually the second one that I will address, is I want to say a little bit about alpha prime corrections in this context. Now, KKLT go on. By introducing these anti-D3 branches at the tip of the throat, whose position is stabilized by the imaginary self-duality of the flux. And in this way, they raise the minima to D-sitter minima. And now the contribution of the second paper, KKL-MMT, is to put into this background they consider mobile D3 brains. And in this way, they want to discuss D bar inflation in this particular background. And the interesting thing, what appeared in their analysis was that the real part of this row, of the scalar parameter row that I had on my last transparency, actually gets an additional piece, which depends on the three-brain scalars. So this is still the volume of the rep 4 cycle, but they find that there's an additional piece which is given by the Kähler potential of the Calabi-Yau manifold, and the coordinates are the three-brand scalars. And because this fact is very important for the following discussion, let me just repeat the arguments that they give for this definition of the rho parameter. So in the presence of three brains, the Kähler potential for the Kähler modulus rho and the three-brain coordinates takes this form. It's a logarithm of the real part of rho minus actually the Kähler potential of the Calabi-Yau manifold. And the way one can argue for this is by looking at the Kaluza-Klein reduction of the Dirac-Bohn-Infeld action. And this will lead, by using this Kähler potential here, you would find that one gets a kinetic term for the three-brain scalars given by this, the second derivative. This means the second derivative of this function k here with respect to phi I and phi bar j. And in the denominator, one has this argument of the logarithm. And on the other hand, by comparing that, and there are additional terms, of course, by involving just single derivatives of k. But this is one of the leading terms. And by comparing that with the term that you would get by reducing the Dirac-Bohn-Infeld action, in the Dirac-Bohn-Infeld action, you would just get r to the 4, where r is the volume of the average radius of the manifold. I should say that in this model, KKLT, you just consider one Kähler modulus. So all the volumina are measured in terms of this radius. So in the 4 cycle, where the 7 brain was wrapped around, was proportional to R4. And here appears the volume to the power 2 third. And because the volume is supposed to be proportional to R6, this is the power which appears. And so just by comparing these two expressions, one sees that the real part of rho should be not R4, but include this term. The second argument was just by analogy to the heterotic string. Already in 85, Witten has written down the low energy effective action for a heterotic string on a Calabi-Yau manifold. And what he finds is that also in that case, the Kähler modulus gets shifted by a term which involves the scalars from the 10-dimensional vectors. And also in his case, the Kähler potential took a very similar form to this one, where this k is just replaced by this quadratic form. Now, this appearance, this shift in the real part of the rho variable leads to what I call the rho problem, in which, if you have been at Renata Kallo's talk during the workshop, should be familiar to you. So she introduced this problem by noticing that from the reduction of the Dirac-Bohn-Infeld action now for the 7 brains, one would deduce a gauge kinetic function or a coupling constant for the 7 brain gauge group, which is just proportional to R4. And in a supersymmetric theory, this should be the real part of a holomorphic function, the so-called gauge kinetic function. But now I told you that the real part of the variable rho, which should appear in this model, is not actually given by r to the power 4, but has this additional piece. And so from the reduction of the Dirac-Bohn-Infeld action, it seems that there's a piece missing. And the piece missing would be this k function times trace f squared. If you would add that, then the coupling constant would actually be the real part of rho. So, and the same issue also arises in the D3 and D7 brain inflation models discussed by Kalosh and collaborators. And the question, what is really the correct definition of the rho variable, is actually a very important question also for moduli stabilization, because it's actually the parameter which appears here in the exponent in the superpotential, which is stabilized by the method of KKLT. And now, in general, one would expect that here appears a gauge kinetic function of the in the exponent of the seven-brain gauge group. So again, one runs into the same problem. Why does it appear that the gauge kinetic function only contains this r to the four term? And a hint towards the solution can be found by considering not one D3 brain, mobile D3 brain, but a stack of them. And in that case, a scalar phi would be a joint scalar in a joint representation of the gauge group on the three brains. And so, actually, this additional term in this case would have to include some trace. I just wrote an overall trace here, but it could be more complicated. But in any way, the missing term would include at least two traces. And so the missing term should actually come from a string diagram with at least two boundaries. And that means an annulus or a cylinder, where one of the boundaries ends on a seven brain and the other one on the three brains. And so the goal would be to determine what is the gauge coupling to one loop order, and especially determine the dependence on the D3 brain scalars.
Is it 100% clear you can't get this from a single trace, the kind of term you need?
I think so, because, I mean, as I said, those are vectors from the 7 brain, and those are scalars from the 3 brain.
Yeah,
and so you have to have one end ending on the 7 brains and one end on the 3 brains in order to get a dependence on both of them. I mean, in principle, you could also have, if you had only had one boundary, then there could be a dependence on the seven brain scalars, but that's a different question.
Yeah.
I mean, that's also a valid question, and we are looking at that also, but I will focus on this particular term here. Okay? So, the strategy that we will use to answer this question is the following. We are not really actually looking at the geometry of KKLT, because that's too complicated to do this one loop calculation. So in order to figure out how the seven brain gauge coupling constant depends on the three brain scalars, we consider a simpler model, a type 1 orientifold model with n equals 1 supersymmetry. Just to get a qualitative picture, so to see if there's any dependence on the three brain scalars at all. So, and for simplicity, we actually look at the T-dual picture of this, just because there are many more results in the literature with which one can compare and have checks. So if you would perform six T-dualities on this orientifold with seven brains and three brains, the D3 brains would be mapped to D9 brains, and their position would be mapped to Wilson lines on the D9 brains, continuous Wilson line moduli. And the D7 brains would be mapped to D5 brains. So the question that I actually asked, which could have been asked independently of the KKL MMT model, but the motivation for us came from that. The question that I actually try to answer is, what is the dependence of the five-brain gauge coupling on the nine-brain Wilson line moduli? So now, to give you a rough plan of the talk, the method I will use to answer this question is known as the background field method. I will introduce this first. And I will apply it to a simpler case, which actually leads to n equals 2 supersymmetry. And it's a model based on the geometry T2 torus times Z2 oriented fold of T4, which is just an orbifold limit of K3. So that's where you reach n equals 2. And then I will tell you how this calculation actually also tells you this story, the answer, and the n equals 1 story. And I will try to interpret the results in the context of the KKL MMT model. And finally, I will make some comments, as I already promised on the first transparency, about alpha prime corrections. So now, for the background field method, there are four one-loop diagrams in type 1 theory. Only two of them have boundaries, so the annulus and the Möbius. But as I already argued, we need two boundaries. So the annulus is actually the only amplitude which is important for this particular question. So I will concentrate on that. The background field method consists in turning on some magnetic field in the uncompactified space-time, for example, F2-3. Its amplitude is given by B, and the embedding into the five-brain gauge group is specified by this generator, which could be in some factor of the five-brain gauge group if there are several. And then, in addition, we add Wilson line moduli on the denying brains. And now the one loop vacuum energy in type 1 is given by the sum of these four diagrams. The open, those with boundaries will depend on the background field and the Wilson lines. And if one expands this one loop vacuum energy in a telex series with respect to B, then the term which multiplies B, the B squared term is actually the correction to the gauge coupling constant at one loop. So what we are doing is calculating the one loop vacuum energy and extracting the coefficient of the B squared term. The model that I will discuss, I already told you, is a type 2B oriented fold from torus times K3. And so it's a torus compactification of type 1 compactified on this oriented fold, orbifold. And the oriented fold group consists of a unity, the world sheet parity omega, R, which is a reflection of both the complex torus coordinates and the combination of omega and R. It has 16 fixed points, and the brain content is one has 32 denying brains, leading to a gauge group of U16 if one doesn't turn on any Wilson lines. And one has 32 D5 brains, which adds another factor of U16 to the gauge group in case that all the D5 brands are placed at the same fixed point. That's the case that I will consider. I put all the D5 brands at the same fixed point. And now notice, because it will appear later on again in the n equals 1 case, that one always has D5 brands in oriented fold models if the oriented fold group contains this element, where omega is combined with a reflection, so with a order 2 element of the oriented fold group. And that can be understood because this is just T dual to the usual omega, and from omega you would get 9 brands, and by T duality that would be mapped to 5 brands. Now, I told you that the amplitude that we are interested in is an annulus with one and on boundary on the 9 brain and one on the 5 brain. And let me just go quickly through the calculation. As I told you, we turn on Wilson lines in the U1, U16 of the D9 brains along the T2 only. And we turn on a flux in the uncompactified spacetime, whose embedding into the U16 of the D5 branch I chose in this way. It's a diagonal matrix with only two non-vanishing entries. And I don't go through the details of the calculation, because also they are not important for the following. And don't worry, this is the most complicated formula I will show you, and it will simplify in a moment anyway. So here I have to sum over the different 9 brands and 5 brands. The QAs here are just the entries of the capital Q. Then these functions here, eta and theta, are the Dedekind eta function and Jacobi theta function, which hopefully are familiar to you from first volume of Joe's book. And the Wilson line moduli just appear here in this sum over Kaluza-Klein momenta. This G is a torus metric. So this is the sum over Kaluza-Klein momenta. And the external background field, on the other hand, appears here, for example, linearly, and also in the argument of the theta functions, which this epsilon is given by the arcus tangens of QA times B. And the very interesting thing is, if you expand this function, this amplitude, to second order in B, it dramatically simplifies. And all the contributions from the string excitations, which are encoded here in the theta functions and eta functions, just disappear. So this is due to n equals 2 supersymmetry, which has been noted by these authors. And only the Kaluza-Klein momentum sum appears in the correction to the gauge coupling constant. Okay, so yeah, this is just a different writing in this. Now, what do we do with this expression now? Here, I again rewrote this exponent appearing in the Kaluza-Klein sum by introducing the complex structure modulus of the torus in this way. And interestingly, the sum and integral can actually be performed, or have been performed, by this guy who was looking at a Kaluza-Klein reduction from 6 to 4 dimensions. And he, of course, also ran into the problem of calculating this Kaluza-Klein sum over Kaluza-Klein momenta. And the way how he proceeds is by splitting the sum into the zero modes, where both m's are zero, and the other terms. And he has to introduce an ultraviolet cutoff for these terms, and ultraviolet and infrared cutoff for this zero mode term. The infrared cutoff is just by introducing this exponential of chi t, and then one has to consider the limit of chi going to zero. And then by introducing these cutoffs, he is allowed to change the order of performing the sum and integrals, and finally he gets this result. So first of all, there's one term, the last one, which seems to diverge in the limit where I remove the ultraviolet cutoff. But it turns out that this term actually drops out if you add these two diagrams. I mean, this term doesn't depend at all on the Wilson lines or the background field. So that's why also these amplitudes can contribute to the prefactor of this term, and it turns out that it just cancels. And in addition, note that first of all, one can show that it has a correct limit if you take the Wilson line moduli to zero. That case had been discussed before in paper by these authors, and you can show that this formula correctly reduces to that, to their formula. And furthermore, it resembles very much the case of the one-loop corrections in the heterotic strain, which have been calculated by Meyer and Stielberger, where also in that case you find exactly this theta 1 theta function appearing with a non-vanishing argument given by the Wilson lines. Okay. So note also that in case that this term here is non-vanishing, if you introduce some rather large background for the Wilson lines, then in fact you would not have to introduce such an infrared cutoff, because the background of the Wilson lines would act as an infrared cutoff anyway. Okay, but I introduce it here also because later on I want to consider the expansion of these terms for small Wilson lines, Wilson line moduli. Yeah, and that's in the T-dual model, that's right. That would be the position of the three brains.
So where is it if the Wilson line is small?
Okay, that would mean that, I mean, that these three brains are close to some given reference point. I mean, like, for example, a fixed point or something. Before I draw some conclusions from the formula that I just showed you for KKL-MMT, I have to generalize the result to the n equals 1 case. And there one would take a T6 orientifold modeled out by some Zn with an even n. For example, we look at the so-called Z6 prime model. In this case, the orientifold group consists of all powers of the twist alpha from 0 to 5 and its combination with the virtual parity omega. And alpha just rotates the complex coordinates of your tori in this way. And note that if you take the third power of this alpha, what you get is that the third torus stays just fixed, and the other two coordinates are inverted. So this is exactly, again, this element R that we had before in the Z2 case. So, and as I told you, if one has such an omega R in the orientifold group, that means that there are the five brains in the spectrum. And so that's the case also here. And because the third torus is fixed, so these five brains are wrapped around the third torus. And this is generally true if n is even. So then you always have the five brains also. Now, the interesting amplitude that we have to calculate is again the 9.5 amplitude. And it consists of six different pieces. Depending on the power of the twist operator that we insert into the trace. And now only those sectors which have a fixed torus will actually depend on the moduli of can depend on the moduli of the background geometry and, for example, the Wilson line moduli, because those moduli only appeared in the sum over Kaluza-Klein momenta. And these fixed tori appear in the so-called n equals 2 sectors, because effectively they behave actually like this n equals 2 theory that I discussed before. And now, in this model, where we have the five brains only wrapped around the third torus, in order to have an appearance of the moduli, one actually has to have the third torus to be fixed, because only in that case we will have a Kaluza-Klein sum, because the five brain is just only wrapped around one of the internal dimensions, this third torus. So the third torus has to be fixed, and that's exactly the case for the twist alpha to the power of 3. So what we have to calculate is actually the sum of these two terms, and that's exactly as before. So as in the case I studied before. But I have to say, of course, I don't want to say that the gauge coupling constant in this case is exactly as before. But the dependence of the gauge coupling on the 9-Brenn Wilson line moduli, or on the moduli in general, will be the same as before. Not on all the moduli, but on the Wilson line moduli. So there will be additional terms from the n equals 1 sectors, for example, and they will also depend on all the string excitations. But for the terms that we are interested in, the dependence on the Wilson line moduli, this is the only amplitude that we have to calculate. Now, what does this mean for the corrections to the gauge kinetic function of the five-Brenn gauge group? So in general, the one-loop physical gauge coupling in string theory, in n equals one string theory, has the following form. It depends on some energy scale, so it's a running coupling due to this logarithmic dependence on mu, which corresponds to the chi parameter that we had before. And then there are two different contributions to the gauge coupling. Ones are from the Wilsonian couplings. Those are actually the real part of some holomorphic function. And in addition, and they come from integrating out heavy fields of the theory, like winding modes or Kaluza-Klein, heavy Kaluza-Klein sets or string excitations. And then in addition, there are contributions from the light fields, and those are not the real part of a holomorphic function. And if one is just interested in the effective action which one gets by integrating out heavy fields, then one would not include these. And that's why you sometimes have the statement that the coupling constant is a real part of a holomorphic function. And that's only if you do not include the contributions from light fields. Now, in order to figure out what contributions from the corrections that we calculated are actually the real part of a holomorphic function, one has to say holomorphic in which coordinates. And so the correct coordinates have been found by these authors. And how they did it, they considered a Kaluza-Klein reduction of type 1 on T2 times K3. And they only looked at the Kähler potential that you would get in that case. Okay, so it's very similar to what we started with. By looking at the Kähler potential of Steve and Oliver, one deduced what would be the right coordinates, or what would have to be the corrections to the tree level part of the coordinates. And now what we will see here is that it beautifully fits with the corrections that we found to the gauge kinetic function. So the correct variables, the Wilson line moduli, are given by this combination of the real Wilson lines, including also this complex structure modulus of the torus. And the Kähler modulus gets also an additional term, which is bilinear in the Wilson line moduli. And the real part of this would just be the imaginary part of U times A1 squared. And now, if you do not consider any Wilson line moduli, then the T modulus without this term is actually the tree level gauge kinetic function for the five brands, this term here. And now the question is, what are the holomorphic, what are the terms in the correction to the gauge coupling that I calculated? Let me show it again. Strange. Okay. So, what of the corrections to the gauge coupling can actually be interpreted as a real part of a holomorphic function. Okay, I think I should show you, because otherwise here I put it somewhere separate. Too bad. Is there any on the floor now? Sorry. Okay, so maybe I should write it down on the blackboard. So we had this term, can you see? Or? So the correction was given by proportional to the logarithm of chi, and then there was plus a squared divided by a square root of g u2. Then there was this term in addition, so there was this additional term here involving only the combination a1 squared times u2. And this is, as I said, the correction to the gauge coupling. And the tree level part is given by the real part of this t. And so this one loop correction part here actually combines with this tree level part in order to give the real part of the complex the new corrected variable t. That's why it appears here. So to be completely honest, we did not check yet that the factors work out correctly. But I can give you an indirect argument why I certainly expect that this term should combine with the tree level term to exactly give t. And that is, if one considers a large background for the Wilson line moduli, then I told you that this chi here get to zero, and this term drops out against this one. Actually, okay, it's the other way around. And you are left with this term only and this term. But and this one is a real part of a holomorphic function, but this one would not be. But in the case that you have non-vanishing Wilson lines, you do not expect to have any light fields in, or at least you can choose your Wilson line modulus A in such a way that you don't have any light fields in this sector of 9 and 5 grains, and so you would only expect to get the real part of a holomorphic function in this case. So, but in addition to the modified variable Keller modulus T, you get all these additional corrections to the one loop gauge kinetic function of the five brains. And those also depend on the Wilson line moduli and also on the complex structure modulus. And now for small Wilson line moduli, you can expand this term here, and you see that there is an additional term, quadratic term in the Wilson line moduli, which is multiplied by the holomorphic Eisenstein series, the second holomorphic Eisenstein series. Okay. Now let me come to the interpretation of this findings. So we saw that F5 at one loop actually does contain the modified Keller modulus T, which is the analog, would be the analog KKL MMT analog of the row variable. And as I said, in particular, it contains this part here, which would be the analog of the real part of which would be the analog of this K. And now, but I also showed you on the last transparency that there are all these other additional corrections to F5 at the same loop order, at string one loop order. And also they depend on this Wilson line moduli and also the complex structure moduli. So one would expect to get an additional dependence on the Wilson line moduli in this case of the superpotential. And in particular, this might help for the problem that KKL MMT had found, and which was confirmed then by Radu and Alex, that the inflaton gets too high mass to be really realistic. Because already in the paper by KKL MMT, they said one way around this conclusion would be if there was an additional dependence of the potential on the three-brain scalars. And those via t-duality correspond to our Wilson line moduli. And in particular, they would need an additional dependence, quadratic dependence on the inflaton field in order to get an additional contribution to the mass. So here we see that we had, at least in this expansion for small a, there is an additional term which is quadratic in A's and might help for this question of the inflaton mass. But let's. They would have, yeah, I think so.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I think, yes.
Oh, I thought of, wait, in the closed ring channel, isn't it just the...
Yeah, in the closed ring channel, it's just a tree level. Mm-hmm.
You don't need excited closed rings.
No.
Okay. Wait, but supergravity doesn't get the whole theta function. They give you the leading term.
Mm-hmm. Sorry, say again?
Supergravity doesn't never give you the whole theta
mm-hmm.
function.
Yeah, that's right.
But it does give you the leading
mm-hmm.
term.
Okay. I mean... I'm not completely sure about that because, I mean, if you had a supergravity description of three brains and seven brains, everything including, and then you might get it, but I'm not sure about that. So what I know is where people got in the Kaluza-Klein reduction, where they got terms which are squared or quadratic in scalars, in the open string scalars, and in the field strengths is by reducing, it comes from the Chern-Simes correction to the to H, yeah, which is dB minus, and here's trace AF, for example. And by reducing that, you can get terms which are bilinear in the scalars come from A and bilinear in F, but it has the wrong trace structure, you see. And only if you break the gauge group totally to U1, you might be able to interpret this as some correction to the gauge coupling constant. But I'm not sure how that works in our case. Anyway, you see here that it would be the scalars from the same gauge group as F. So I don't know how you would get a mixed term where the coupling constant of the five form depends on the nine brain scalar. I wouldn't know how to get it from Kaluza-Klein reduction. But I mean, it's an interesting question. I don't say that it's not possible. But at the moment, I wouldn't know how to do it.
Another question, mm-hmm. What the input time do you like now? Do you need a fine tuning?
I would guess yes. I mean, you have this additional contribution which depends on E, the Eisenstein series, and now it depends, of course, on the value of the complex structure modulus. And also...
But you need those to be finely tuned if you're actually doing like...
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, it will certainly not generically solve the problem. I mean, but that's just making a little bit more explicit what they have in the paper already, where they say just make a very general ANDERS, the potential might depend on the scalars also, and then one might get a dependence, an additional dependence.
What's the sign in this direction?
That's a good question. So I would guess it can happen both.
Yeah, real part of A squared has either sign, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's true. It depends on I would guess it can have both signs, but okay, I have to check. Okay, in the 2T dual picture, one would conclude that the 7-brain gauge kinetic function depends on the 3-brain position, but only transverse to the 7-brains in our case. So this is actually the inflaton field in the D3, D7 brain inflation models, but it's not actually what one would have expected now in the KKL MMT model, because there the correction depended on all 6 3-brain scalars. But there's an obvious difference from the model that we discussed to the KKL MMT model, because they, as I said, only consider 1 Kähler modulus, and now we have at least 3 already from the unfitted sector. And for these 3 Kähler moduli, there has been a rough proposal by these authors how the Kähler potential should look like in the case that you have denominants and 5-brains wrapped around a third torus. They give a more general formula, but I just show you this one. And there you see that the Wilson-Line moduli, the other ones, which did not appear in T3, which was the T of my last transparency, do appear and will correct the other 2 Kähler moduli. And also the 5-brain scalars do appear, and for example shift the gauge kinetic function of the 9-brains. And that comes back to your question at the beginning. One can ask a more general question, and we are looking actually at this more general question: what are the dependencies on what are the one loop corrections to also the 9-brain gauge coupling constants from the 5-brain scalars. And in that case, you just have to turn on also background fields for the 5-brains and in addition additional Wilson lines for the 5-brains. So, but that's a much more complicated story, and it's not relevant for the question I posed, so I don't go into the details. Rather, let me now come to the second question that I wanted to just briefly tell you something about. It's a question that arose in the discussion that I and Markus had with Joe during the workshop, and I just recently started to think about it. So I really just have a very preliminary result, and wanted to ask also what your opinion is about it. And that's about alpha prime corrections. And the question I want to ask is just a rather humble one, I would say. I just want to check whether it might be consistent at all to just neglect all the, let's say, leading alpha prime corrections, which would lead to corrections which are only suppressed by inverse powers of the volume. But on the other hand, taking this non-perturbative contributions to the superpotential, which has an exponential suppression with the volume. So I was just wondering, in case you just turn on one known correction to the Kähler potential, might it change the story completely, or is it just a small change and one might hope that everything works out well? So what I'm certainly not trying to do is a consistent extension of the model to next alpha prime order, because that is, I would say, at the moment a not feasible task, because let me remind you that the higher derivative terms in type 2B theory, only a few of them are really known, and the most famous one certainly this term which consists 4 powers of the Riemann tensor. And that includes, for example, one term which is proportional just to the Ricci scalar, and then some combination of 3 Riemann tensors. And this term would lead, for example, to a correction to the Keller metric for the moduli. It would lead to a correction of the metric on the moduli space of the geometric moduli. And it doesn't have to be Keller. But and I denote these geometric moduli collectively by M here. And the correction would be proportional to the Euler number by integrating this combination of R3 here. And similarly, one would get similar corrections to the scalars, to the moduli one would get from the NSNS2 form and from the 4 form. And partial results are known in those two cases, but certainly not all that one would need to make a complete analysis. But those corrections, which are already present without fluxes, can be calculated by mirror symmetry. And the result we just took and truncated it to the n equals 1 case by projecting out those scalars which are not present in the orientifolded theory. And what happens in this case is that the Keller potential for the Keller modulus just gets a shift. The argument of the logarithm gets a shift, which is proportional to the Euler number, which is somehow to be expected from these terms. And it also depends on the dilaton and involves here a factor of zeta of 3 divided by 4. And it certainly does not include any terms which additional terms which would arise by turning on fluxes, which could come for example from such a term or also from higher dimensional objects like d-branes or orientifold planes. So, but as I said, I just want to see, taking into account this one term, does it change the story qualitatively in a dramatic way, or is it just a small change? So what I will do now is I will just redo the example that is in the first paper by KKLT. I consider the same superpotential as they do, where this constant piece here was taken to be minus 10 to the minus 4. And this additional piece from the Gugino condensate, for example, they choose these values for the constants, and I'll do exactly the same. Furthermore, the Keller modulus, they say one can assume to be real, so that the axion is stabilized at zero. And in addition, they assume that all the complex structure moduli and the dilaton are fixed. And I'll do also, in that case, I'll do exactly the same. And in order to have some control, or to hope to have some control at all, I consider the case that the dilaton should be fixed at a value of, let's say, 1/10 or so.
Well, and they had some answer to this that involves smallness of little a or something? Is in KKLT, mm-hmm. they had some suggestion for why you could neglect these corrections.
So you were saying why one cannot, I mean, my question is not can one neglect these corrections at all, but is it consistent to take only those but not the...
Right.
I agree with you. If without this term, you would not stabilize a Keller modulus. I mean, that's for sure.
Right. And they had an argument. I thought, well, maybe mm-hmm. duplicate it, but I thought they had an argument about...
I agree with you. I mean...
why it is consistent.
They say, to my knowledge, is that we have to make sure that the value that you get by stabilizing the volume is large, so that you can neglect the alpha prime corrections. But as I said, somehow I found this not convincing enough, because the alpha prime corrections are only suppressed by some inverse power, and this one would be suppressed by... So if it's large, then...
It's better to see it.
This one.
It involves smallness of this coefficient.
Of this little a?
Or there was some argument involving the parameter.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, go
yeah, on. I mean, might be, but yeah, we can maybe discuss it later. So, okay. Yeah, and if I make this assumption that the dilaton is roughly of the order 1/10, then you see if, this correction term here involves minus 3/2 of e to the phi. And so this one would be roughly of the order 1/30, and the coefficient that I dropped here, this theta of 2 over 4 is roughly, theta of 3 is roughly 1, so it would be roughly of the order of 10 times the Euler number, this constant psi here, okay? So and now, if I just plug in this formula for W and this corrected K into the formula for the potential, and then I check what happens for different values of psi. And I can show you what happens. So I mean, it's just a very rather easy exercise with Maple. So the curve xi equals 0 is exactly the one of KKLT. And now I turned on a positive xi. And you'll see what happens for positive xi is that the minimum moves upwards and to the right to larger values of sigma, where sigma is now the volume. And the opposite happens if I turn on if I have a negative sign for xi, then it would move in that direction. And now, interestingly, at a value of 2,800, the minimum suddenly gets positive, which would mean that supersymmetry somehow has to be broken spontaneously at such a value, which is somehow I don't really understand at the moment.
What is xi again? I mean, what?
Xi is
the size of the correction?
It's proportional to the Euler number times the maximum expectation value of the dilaton.
So why is there some reason you actually think it's such large numbers for it?
No, no. Right?
You said it was roughly 10 times the Euler number?
Yes.
So
I mean, that assumes
the order of magnitude is small.
So I will come back to that question in a moment, okay? Although on the next in the second transparency.
So you're saying this is a way of getting positive coupled or constant without adding the sort of anti-brains?
I mean, it could mean that. I don't say that it means that because I mean it's a very rough analysis because I only include this one term and so. But it might be, you know, that all these. Now those theorems somehow say that the story might change if you include higher derivative terms, and I don't know actually what it means. But if it's really true that it goes up, then you don't have to add anything more. I mean, certainly you still have to add this non-perturbative correction. Without this Gagino additional term to the superpotential, you would not get this. So if you just include the correction alpha prime correction, but no correction to the superpotential, you would not. At any minimum, any stabilized Kähler modulus.
Also, but by the time psi gets this big, presumably all the other corrections are very important too, right? The higher powers in R.
I don't know. Isn't that somehow independent? Because I mean, the volume is still large somehow. The higher alpha prime corrections. Okay. They are not somehow. It might be that there are higher corrections which are proportional to Euler number squared or something. I have no idea. But okay. So and then roughly at a value of 2,855, the minimum disappears. That's just what happens when you crank it up. So. Which other? Yeah, I mean.
Capital A, little a, and you didn't come back.
I don't know.
You should probably come back if you the other ones. To go to larger volumes.
Yeah.
Volumes.
I would guess. I certainly agree that the analysis is very preliminary. Because I made all these assumptions, for example, okay, it comes on this transparency anyway. I made all these assumptions. So it's not clear to me Okay, let me start at the beginning. So if you look at the list of Kreutzer in the net, which contains roughly 500 million different Calabi-Yong manifolds, then you will find that all examples are limited by an Euler number smaller than 960. But then, as I said, this correction might be proportional to 10 times the Euler number. So it depends on the value of the dilaton, whether this leaves room for such a large xi or not. But that's one comment I wanted to make. Then the other comment I want to make is I don't know exactly how to interpret these findings, except that I would say that alpha prime corrections actually might have a very interesting and important role in this game. Which role actually is hard to say, because you have additional alpha prime corrections that I just neglected, and which would depend on the value of the fluxes that you turn on, for example, also. And I made all these assumptions, as you said, for example, that I can still have the same values of A, and also that the dilaton is just stabilized at a small value. And it might happen something else if I do not make this assumption and take the dilaton into account also, and see whether one finds a minimum in that case. And it might just be that the dilaton gets stabilized at some value which is proportional to the Euler number or something, and then one would get into other problems, of course, because then the dilaton would be stabilized at a strong coupling. But this assumption that the dilaton is just fixed at a value one tens might be not correct. So there are a lot of assumptions, but I just thought it was interesting to see what happens if one plays this game. And yeah, I think it's it would be interesting to look to weaken some of the assumptions and see what happens. So let me come to the conclusions now and tell you the three points that I think you might want to take out of this. First of all, I think that KKL-MMT indeed probably use the right field variables, and this missing term should arise at string one loop, as we have seen in this simpler model that I discussed for you. And in addition, we saw that taking into account one loop corrections would also lead to additional dependencies on the gauge coupling, on the gauge kinetic function of the seven brands on the three brand scalars, and those might be relevant for the question of the mass of the inflaton field. And again, I think it's an interesting open issue to incorporate alpha prime corrections into the model of KKLT. Okay, thanks.
On that last point, Mike Dine, also what he was here, was emphasizing that they don't really seem to have, when you actually put in the constants, they don't really have good alpha constants, in the sense that the excited spring states are really just as, no heavier than the Coulomb's planet excitation. I think he basically did an estimate of these two mass scales, trying to keep the dependence on the flux, and there wasn't any separation between them. I don't know if it's the same point you're making or not.
I mean, it might be related to that. I don't know.
Well, no, in fact, it's dependent on the total number of flux units, and I don't know whether that's a good, but I don't know whether there was any direct relation between them.
Might be, I don't know.
Can you turn this last argument around and use supersymmetry to bound the size of the alpha prime corrections? So if there is a supersymmetric exclusion on the alpha prime corrections.
So I mean, for this special correction, I would say yes, but you mean in general, and then you would really have to know how all the other alpha prime corrections appear in this potential. I don't think that's possible. Well, at the moment, I wouldn't know how to do it.
Thank Michael again.